Blog Talk Radio.
With us tonight. Also, we want to make sure you can connect with us through the web link. If you want to hear the show, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/LDSmith. Sound like I have my co-host on there now. Lauren, I introduced you, but I'll do it again because it's so special. You are my daughter, so I want to make sure you are heard and everybody know who you are. We have Lauren D. Smith, the lady of the millennium. Lauren, say hello to everybody.
Good evening, everybody. Great to be back with you this week, brand new topics, ready to get it going.
You know, I appreciate you being with me, Lauren. We're very excited about having you. Oh, my special guest expert tonight, and we always glad to have her on here. She's on here from time to time. And this lady is from Georgia. So we want her to share her welcome with you, and that's Dr. Olivia E. Smith. Hey, Doc.
Hello. How are you all?
Awesome, awesome. I'm always glad to have you all on the show because, you know, we got a very exciting show tonight. Remember I stated earlier the title is The African-American Family Under Siege. So we're going to have some topics that's going to relate to what's going on in our community. We're going to share some thoughts on it, and then we want you to call in through our call-in number 347-857-492. Press 1. We'll identify you with the last four digits of your cell and telephone number, and then we'll allow you to come on and introduce yourself and just jump into the conversation. All right, co-host, we want to try to start this show out tonight talking about, as we said, the African-American family under siege. But then I had a question. It was, why are African-American families falling through the crack in today's society? That's one of the main questions, and we're going to talk about topics related to that. But we want to have some thought on that. Why are African-American families falling through the crack in today's society?
And when you say falling through the crack, do you mean financially or the status of our children within the family?
We're going to touch bases on all of those. So we'll just start off, for example, single-parent homes. Why are our families and our families are falling through the crack? What is society? What part society should play in making sure we improve? Not saying families can't operate being single-parent home, but why are we falling through the crack? Is that a contribution or that contributing to us falling through the crack? We can start off with it that way.
I think, and I've shared this in some professional circles, some people agree, some disagree, and some are offended. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay. I think it started with integration. I think that as we integrated, there was a pull by the white community to keep us separate but equal, quote unquote. And I think the challenge is as baby boomers begin to move into that generation, we learn a new culture, a new behavior, and we did learn education. Moving forward, education or a trade, which was significant for us as African Americans. But then the baby boomers came about. We started our families. And one of the things that I found in terms of my work is that as parents, we have failed our children at this point in the game because as opposed to certain morals and values, we give them things. And the things have added up and the things are a bit boring. So young people, especially millennials, they look for something different. And they're very outspoken about what they're looking for versus the baby boomer generation. So
okay.
I think it started with integration.
Okay. And I'm going to jump in here, then I'm going to ask our millennial. She can add a thought from being in the millennial. I agree because I came through that same time. At one time, even though we were segregated, it was a African American families was held together. Whether it was held together by the community or other family, extended family members, we was held together. Then we had an opportunity to go to school and integrate schools in the 68. Some say, "Whoa, that's a long time ago." In 1968, especially in Alabama, and some of the things that we cherished more during that time, we held on to them. but seemed like it was not passed on to the Generation X, which is the next generation, or so much is passed on to the millennium. Some simple things about your own culture and your own history. For us to understand where we are today, we have to know where we come from. And I'm not talking about going back to 1736. I'm not talking about going to 1836. I'm not talking about 1936. But simple that we're still one. We need to work together. It's take, just like the African proverb, it takes a whole village to raise one child. So that means everybody have to play a part in each one of those young people's lives so they have a chance for success. So that was kind of like because the teacher actually come into the community, lived in the community, came to your house, and he made contact with your parent and admit something. Something happened in the last 40 years that we lost it, and it goes from the baby boomers to the Generation X. And so now we have our millennium. Now, I may be a group of missing in that, but I didn't think I am. But that's one of the things that may occur, that we are missing that support out of our families and our community. You know, agree or disagree, but that's a point that can be well taken and looked at, and we all have thoughts about it. Our millennium. Lauren, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have me and my business partner, we were discussing something similar to this about a month ago, and I basically stated that the breakdown of the African American family, in my opinion, occurred when the railroad jobs stopped, the factory jobs stopped, and now you had fathers who no longer had jobs. Okay. So fathers who no longer had jobs, now the mother is working two or three jobs, and now you have chaos occurring in the house because now we're arguing about financial problems, and then you have a separation that it happens, right? So during that separation, that's where I believe a lot of families got, I won't say misconstrued, but a lot of things weren't how they used to be. So now you had kids that were in two-parent households. Now they are raised in one-parent households with bickering, arguing, back and forth, mom and dad house, boom, boom, boom. And now they see that, right? So you had those steel, I call them steel mill babies. Now you have the steel mill babies. Now they have children, and that cycle repeats itself. So the cycle that they have seen at home, where they went from a happy family to a dysfunctional family, they didn't take the happy times, they took the bad times. And those bad times, that's what they picked up. Now they have their own kids. And now they're teaching the same thing. So now you have what I call a chain reaction. Something happened with my mama, then it happened to me, now it's going to happen to my kids, now it's going to happen to their kids. You have to break the cycle. So I believe that when that happened, that started the I guess you could say the breakdown in the African-American home when it comes to relationships with each other, financial relationships with religion. That, in my opinion, that's what shifted a lot of mindset. So, I would say that's my point.
That's awesome, Laura. Now we have a call on here, so I'm gonna allow this caller to chime in. Caller with last four digits is 4644. You now have an opportunity. Please introduce yourself and your location.
I'm calling from the Midwest. My
yes,
name
sir.
Is Tim.
Yes, sir.
You know, I keep hearing about this integration. Blacks in America are United States citizens. I mean, that's what they are. Their culture is either American culture or a subversion thereof.
Right.
And ethnic groups in this country have different subversions.
Okay.
So I hear that all the time. And you know, your curriculum in your school can be whatever the stakeholders and the parents in that school district want it to be. That's up to you, the parents, and this group to determine what it is for their children. And that's one reason why I'm for school choice. This administration we have is for school choice. parents should have a right to put their child in the environment, educational environment, that they feel is best and go along with the overall plans for their child. Not left up to a school board, not left up to a teacher's union. If they want to take their child out of one situation and put them in another, they should, and the money should follow that child. So that there is one thing that would help bring about a better economic paradigm amongst this group that you call black. And another thing, all blacks are not the same. There's a difference between who you call black and objective black African Americans.
Yeah.
And in any ethnic group, any place on the planet, you're only going to have a certain number, percentage, and it's usually around 10% that does extraordinary, out-of-the-box, outstanding things as far as leaders, business, and so on and so on and so on. Now, I tell you one thing.
Yeah.
I voted and supported Donald Trump. And these issues, for instance, like on immigration and the ridding the country of these undocumented workers, these undocumented immigrants, I don't know why come blacks are not for that. Because the jobs, especially these professions, you should train your own kids for these jobs. And when these visas expire, they should not allow them to come back into the country. Train Americans for those jobs. This stuff talking about Americans won't work on, do the work that these immigrants are doing is a bunch of hogwash. If you got people that's receiving government subsidies, assistance, then they need to work for them. Look at your prison population. Put them to doing something that these other illegals are doing.
Okay.
What, are you going to keep them in prison and just keep paying and paying and have this revolving door? It's totally ridiculous. But, you talking about culture and teacher, know thyself. You know, you don't have some schools like that have been told that's closed down because of the academic performance. One in Chicago, Barbara Sizemore, was an African Center school, and I like African Center school, but you have to teach these kids also skills, especially in the areas where there's high demand, like STEM fields, plus medicine. You hear reports about the number of shortages that's going to be in aviation, for airline pilots, the military is short, 4,000 plus 800 in combat. Well, train your children, put them in schools, create schools that can prepare them for those professions. There's a shortage in drone pilots. Start teaching them how to fly on assimilation in the basement of churches.
Okay.
I mean, it's simple what's needed to be done. What's your opinion on that? What, how you stand on school choice?
And my co-host as well as myself, I'm one of those individuals. I put 35 years in public education as a public education teacher, educator, and I've seen it for all angles. And what you're saying is very much true. I'm agreeing with you 100%. School choice in existence. We have to open our minds up. Even charter schools on their way. We always have some sense of a choice, school choice, because you always had private schools, Episcopal schools or church schools or whatever you may call it. The thing you hit mostly on that, and I want to kind of share, and I'm going to let my co-host jump in here. And I do thank you for calling. I really appreciate you for calling. I want you to make sure you listen to the show. And if you want to just join us back again, we'll make sure. I'm going to keep you on the line, okay, so you make sure you can share.
Yeah, I'll mute
thoughts,
myself.
Okay?
Yeah, I'll mute
okay.
myself.
Awesome. Okay, as I was saying, I want my co-host to jump in here. One of the things that is so important that we are – kind of getting away from what we need to train our young people for a chance for success. We always said that, you know, the institution is really not the institution unless you is made of the individuals in the institution that are preparing to make that institution successful. You might say, what are you saying? It takes those individuals in there. We have to adjust to what's going on. It doesn't make a difference whether it's school choice or whether it's charter schools or whether it's private schools or public schools. If we focus on whatever is needed to make those students successful, then 9 times out of 10, our young people have an opportunity to succeed at a high level. Yes, we have a challenge with the undocumented immigrants coming in this country. So, and focus on the job that I think some of us have stepped away from and said that we don't want to do those jobs. And what's going on, someone has to do this. Everybody can't sit in the office all day. Everybody can't be the supervisor. Everybody can't be the CEO. Everybody can't. Someone has to do the work. And the thing about it, if you don't go get what's needed, a skill or to get the education that's needed, you're not going to be in those jobs. That means you have to be in a job down here. And I think something, in agreeing or disagreeing with some individuals, I think somehow a mindset in this millennium is that if I don't have that job as the supervisor, I'm not going to have a job at all. And I'm not saying that's totally, and that's a sense of entitlement, and some people can agree or disagree, but we have a sense of entitlement. We're entitled to an opportunity. That's what my entitlement is all about. If we're given the best opportunity, provided with everything we need, we can perform to the highest level we need to be, and then we don't have to worry about anything else. But I'm going to let my co-host, y'all jump in here right now. And I do want my caller to hang in there, and we're going to let our co-host share his thoughts, and we have some other callers that are preparing and add their thoughts as well. The call-in number is 347-857-4192. Co-host, Dr. Smith?
Yes.
And Lori, you, as our caller shares some thoughts, and we want to kind of talk about, because we're talking about the African-American family, as we know, how in relation to some of the things he was sharing with us, how it can improve our family. A sense, and Lauren was sharing some things, whereas you, Dr. Smith, but we just want to kind of take that conversation a little further.
Well, yeah, I agree with the call. I agree with you know, a lot of the key points that he expressed, and we have to focus on getting a skill trade or getting education, getting some type of training so that we can go forth. You know, one of the jobs when I was growing up that I was so in awe about was people who were like bricklayers or carpenters.
Yeah.
Because they would always bring something together and build it. And I was always so impressed with people's parents who did that kind of thing. And I don't see much of that anymore. You know, I see more of the brown people having those jobs and mm-hmm. redoing homes and doing it on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, which for me was symbolic of, for me that was strength, that was going forth with a good skill. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, some people, you know, I often hear people say, well, okay, this company will do whatever. And when the company comes, it's a bunch of brown people doing the work. I don't have a problem with that. But that's a skill that we had that was so significant in African-American community when I was growing up.
Exactly. And, and Lauren, you have some thoughts. Yeah. You're still, Dr.
Yeah,
Smith, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just looking at labor, just the piece of labor, you know, and where are those jobs going? What did we decide to do with those jobs if we chose mm-hmm. to come back to that type mm-hmm. work?
Exactly. Well, that's a decision have to be made. Whether we're going to keep in our minds that those skills. And one of the things I like to say, being a career tech director, being able to get our students through our career pathway, which would be brick masonry, carpentry, automotive mechanics, technology they call them now, or through graphic design or law enforcement, those kind of skills that we're training in some schools. A lot of systems are adding to that, adding to their curriculum. That, and we had a career coach on recently who was talking about that, and they're still grinding at it. That's a key thing right there. And if we can get a chance to get those skills, we'll have an opportunity to be real successful. And maybe the brown individuals won't get the job, or the undocumented immigrants won't get the job, because we'll be willing to take that. Anything that gives us the opportunity to pull our families together, we need to grab hold to it and use it and go ahead. Lauren, you want to add some thoughts to that?
I just got a couple things to add, because we were talking about labor jobs, and labor jobs are going to be for people who are, I'm about to be serious with you, are people who are between the ages of 17 and 26, 27. And that's where we need to focus our attention when we talk about labor jobs. Now, the thing about that age group right there is they feel entitled. I'm in the age group. I don't feel entitled, but I have to speak for, you know, everybody else. We feel entitled. We feel as if, you know, we don't have to. We can go to college. We don't have to get a trade for what? A trade. My mama had a trade. My daddy had a trade. They ain't getting them nowhere. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And we've lost the mindset that everybody's not made for college. You know, everybody's not made
correct
for their life. So we as a society, as a community, need to start back promoting or acknowledging trades, because it's almost like now, like, I have a friend who's a welder, and he's like, females look down on him like he's nothing, and he makes good money as a welder. A welder doesn't make bad money. We feel our mindset is so messed up. It's, if you don't go to college, you don't have a four-year degree, you ain't working, you ain't a lawyer, you're not a doctor, you're not a school teacher, you're not an engineer, you're nothing. That's our mindset. We have to change our mindset. I'm talking to people between the ages of 17, about 27, 28. We got to change our mindset, because what's going to happen is those people, those brown people, are going to take those jobs. And we already know that corporate is not hiring African-Americans for those jobs. Let's be real. They're not. So we have to change our mindset and go back to what our parents did to make a living, because it worked for them. It'll work for us.
You know, when you mentioned being a welder, I have a friend, and his son went through a dual program, and he was able to get his high school diploma as well as a college degree in a two-year time. I'm not talking about a four-year, but like a junior or technical, but he was a welder. At 18, he started welding. His starting salary was $54,000. Now, that's here in Atlanta, and he was working on building downtown the Mercedes-Benz station. He was doing that type work. But he started in the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The salary.
Yes.
So,
I mean,
those are skilled areas.
Exactly. And just to kind of add, as the former career tech in Lyons County, one of the areas that we did not have, but a lot of the industry around us had welding, but we didn't have it in our career tech program. So we had an opportunity. The state gave us an opportunity by the grant and wrote a grant for that provided about $250,000 to start up a welding program. We was taking our students down to Mobile with a shipyard at, and some of them was getting an opportunity to be interviewed at 17 and 18 years old. You get a chance to interview, and possibly you could start off with $60,000 or $70,000. Now, I think that's a whole lot, but that's a lot when you're coming out of high school. You just got your credentials. Credentials speak directly to you're qualified enough to do that job, or qualified enough to be trained for that job. because I did encounter some other problems dealing with that as well. And all of this to pull our families closer together. Because the more money we bring to our home economically or financially, that's going to allow us to kind of get some understanding of exactly how we want to go and which way we want to go. And it builds our family because now we got breadwinners. And that's a topic that we're going to talk about before the night is over with. But that's a key thing. I had a caller on that wanted to share some thoughts about career coach. Actually, it was a guest speaker we had recently, a guest expert on here recently, and they had some thoughts, and I want to see if she want to share some thoughts in regards to how the credentialing and how the career tech, getting that skill, have allowed our young people to grow and also bring their families, help bring their families together and not prepare them to have families themselves. The caller with the last four digits of 5452. Tell us your name and your location.
Hello, Montgomery.
Hello.
And I was calling. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you. Thank you for calling.
And I was calling as a career coach, which was a grant by the State Department of Alabama that there's a need for more career coaches in the system to kind of give a break for the counselors that really need to do their jobs. And so the purpose of the career coach was to expose students at an early age about the endless opportunities that they have, as well as on the technical level, because we know all students are not going to a four-year institution. Most of our African-American students don't excel in reading and math, and so those that don't, they can turn their hands-on kinesthetic skills into opportunities, like you mentioned earlier, welding or building science, plumbing, electrical technology, where our students learn more by using their hands. And so with the technical center that we have now in our district, we see a lot more African-American students that gravitate toward those areas, and they're also a part of dual enrollment program with our community college, which they earn those dual credits if they do want to pursue a career once they leave high school. But those students are ready to go straight into the workforce. They have various industry certifications that the local Chamber of Commerce tells us that they need. And with the retiring of the baby boomers, there's a high demand to fill those positions because of the retirees. So the technical center is really pushing out a mass number of students into the workforce now, and they're starting out $15, $18, $20 an hour with just a high school diploma with those basic skills that they learn from the technical center. So it's a win-win situation for the community, the students, the parents. That looks good from the district standpoint and credentialing for the system.
Awesome. We that's some great information, good supporting information. Call from Montgomery. Don't hang up. Listen to the show, and we appreciate you calling in. I'm going to go back to our caller we had from the Midwest, and I know he's been listening to the show. Can you just, we've just been talking about how career tech and how those young people can get those skill training and what several areas are doing. You want to share some thoughts on that?
Well, I don't have any problem with the technical skills. You know, I spent 40-plus years erecting structural steel buildings, bridges, and other things dealing with that trade, just like your Mercedes-Benz dome down there that Moody and Russell built. I've done that up here in the St. Louis area.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is this, is that African-Americans, blacks in the United States, they should at least have their representative number in science, technology, engineering, and math, and medicine. But right now, they don't. On the National Society of Black Engineers website, NSBE, NSBE, they have over 8,000 jobs that's been posted. Some as recently as yesterday. But that is not being filled. And they need to be filled. And as I said before, you have an abundance of foreigners that's here in the United States working on visas, work visas. And when those work visas expire, they should be sent back home. and you should replace them with American workers. So it's up to blacks to prepare their children for those particular fields. Public schools are not going to do it. Whites are not going to do it. Nigerians are not going to do it. Black Americans have to prepare their own children for these talents. I mean, and you know, the funny thing, if you look at the group, the ethnic group that is in doctors, pharmaceutical, science, that are in engineering, it's Africans from the African continent, especially Nigerians. So we have to do a better job than what's being done in order to bring up your percentage. 13%, 13% of the population, you should have more than 4% of the total engineers in the United States.
Exactly. Awesome, awesome. You know, and I really appreciate you chiming in, and we're going to continue with some discussion on that. And like I say, you're on the line, and you can be on mute, or I'll put you on a mute, and then we'll let you join back in, okay? Appreciate you, brother. All right. All of this discussion is great. Now, the call-in number is 347-857-4192. We want you to call in and share your thought. We want to thank both our callers that called in for sharing that thought with us in regards to actually what's going on, what can it help our communities continue, or our African-American families to not be under siege but lead toward more development. The STEM program is something that's been talked about very much so. Now, our schools are including that on a full-time basis now, the STEM program. And it's a slowly developing where it needs to go. It's taking its time, but it's moving in the right direction. So we have to kind of look in that direction and say that we have to continue to grind. Yes, we're in 2018, soon to be 2020, because everybody had a 5-year, 10-year plan, and 2020 was coming up, and we have to evaluate where we are in our education system, where we are in our cultural, where we are in regards to our economics. All of this we have to look at and take time to develop and continue to develop our families. All right, at this time, you know, we're going to kind of look at a couple other things. And one of the things is, since we've been talking about jobs, and once we train our young people, our finance and our economics will get better in our community. We've been talking about education as well. That was another topic we was going to talk about. My question to my co-host and to my special guest is, what exactly can a family do, because I heard some bits and pieces of it, to help support the economics, help support our young people to have a chance for success and get jobs and do things? What can we do? What can we do as African-American families to help our young people get those jobs, get the training, be able to be trained? Share your thoughts. Can you share some thoughts on that?
Well, for me, it's this is Dr. Smith. What can a family do to support economics? One of the things that I think we could do, and we've been pushing on that or talking more about that, is ensuring that our children are at the table for training, at the table for resources and programs that will help develop them while we're parenting them, and mentorships. I think mentorships are very critical to our kids moving forward.
Exactly.
Or having upward mobility. Mentorships are great.
Okay. Dr. Smith, do we have many groups that are doing mentoring or blazing trails in regards to our young people? Not only our young people, but our parents, our adults, because our adults need to be mentored too as well. We want to focus on children, but we got to focus on some adults, because if you're able to train or even give them the support, they can work toward teaching their children, because the education process don't start when you get to school, as our caller said about we expect the public schools or the schools to raise our children. It starts at home. So what exactly can we do? Can our culture do, or our families can do, to help with the situation and getting our young people prepared to be able to just open their minds up to and their willingness and not feel entitled? What can we do? So all of this work.
Well, parental teaching. If it starts at home, then we must encourage our children. Parental teaching, start by example. Reading is one of the areas that I think is so important. Is your child reading? Does he or she read a book here or there? Now, a lot of people say it's boring. It's a geeky thing. But as you read, it's also a resource, too, because if you free your mind, you will learn. And that's why I think reading is very important. And I'm saying mentorships. There are programs out there like 100, you know, Black Men, 100 Black Women in certain areas, just for an example now. Who are encouraging the kids to come forth? Do they reach everybody? No. But that's an example of mentorship and even in the community. Sororities, fraternities, in the community.
Churches, yes. Everything can help. Everybody can play a part, and I do agree with you, Dr. Smith, on that end. Because it's really important. And I just want to say this. Now, the call-in number is 347-857-4192. Just recently, I was sort of like thrown back or stunned when I read a federal report dealing with school system or dealing with one particular school system. And I was just shocked to know that the school of over, I'll just be realistic, school of 1,400 students only have 13.05% reading at a proficient level. 13.5. If you want to say a senior class of 300 or 400, only 13.05 is reading at a proficient level. They can't do it all at school. Got to do it somewhere else. Then that was not even more shocking to what I'm about to give you now. There's a school, and pretty much because of the location, and I want to talk about that a little bit too. Their math proficiency was 1.6. Let's share some thoughts about that. Their reading proficiency for 375 students was 13.05, and their math proficiency was 1.6. And when I saw it, I asked the individual, is this real? This is posted on, you can go to anybody website. Well, go to the state of Alabama, you can go to the website, to any school, punch up any county, any school, you can see what their reading proficiency is, what their math proficiency is. And something is wrong. And I want you all to share some thoughts in regards to that. And that's education.
Well, if it's at that point, then where are the parents? Why isn't somebody in that school finding out what's going on with my child? Because those numbers are staggering. What's going on with my child? What's going on that the scores are so low? Where's the PTO, the PTA? And then community, expose that in the community.
Exactly. Lauren, you got some thought on that?
Yeah, all that, the low numbers, all that started at home. Right. That starts at home. Parents have to be more involved in kids' education, and not just involved when it suits the parent. So not just involved when it comes to discipline-wise at school.
Right.
You must be involved when it comes to education-wise. If your child comes home for 3 nights out the week and say, we don't have homework, either you need to be at school figuring out why they don't have homework, or you need to be searching through book bags, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's really going on. Now, I know Montgomery County is piss poor when it comes to homework, because I've seen with my own eyes that kids walking around don't have no books in the class, and they got 3 books in the class, and it's 25 kids in the class, and they got shell books, and, you know, it's getting out of hand. Now, that's when I think parents need to step up and go in and see, hey, what can we do as parents to make this better? Can we print out the books, and can we do something so that our child will not be behind? Because if you can't read, you can't do anything. Reading is fundamental, and it's essential to life itself. So I think it's a mindset that the parents have to change, that the teacher's going to do everything at school, that I don't have to do anything, because that's not true. You know, we have to become more involved when it comes to our kids' education.
And Lauren, you're so correct, as well as Dr. Smith. I had some numbers, some data that I was looking at in regards to where our failing schools are. And it was just talking in regards to black students attending the worst schools. And that was under some of the issues that's going on in our country about our family. And it was black students attend worse schools. And it says that the school system remains highly segregated by race and economic status. Black students make up 16% of public school population, but average black student attends a school that's 50% black. So those numbers that they had there in regard to where we fit in the percentile and everything, what I just gave to you when I gave you those numbers about reading proficiency. Now, you have to understand, when you say reading proficiency, that means you're able to, you're able to comprehend, you're able to do vocabulary, you are able to be able to compose a complete sentence and a paragraph, those kind of things where we said proficiency, and our young people are not able to read. And if you at 13.05%, your school is only that based on the various type of analysis or utensils that's being used, like, for example, ACT Aspire is one of those that being used in the school system, particularly here in Alabama. And your school is only performing 13.05%. And labor goes with the school. So if you got 1,400 students, figure that out. It's less than it's rather 100 and maybe 170 kids out of 1,400 is able to read reading proficiency. The four things I say I ought to be able to do. Take the math. The math, it's a lot of things involved. You got all levels of math because you prerequisition all the way up through till you get to your senior level. And here our students at 1.6% out of 1,400 students. We fight a losing battle. This is another reason we have to say that our families are being destroyed, because once we are under siege, they don't say destroyed, under siege. I would have to say that's one of the reasons, because if you're not able to function, that means you don't have a chance of success. So if you decide to start a family, I want you to think about that, start a family, and you're not performing up to the level, what you expect out of the children? Because, you know, I always said better people, if you prepare them early and often, then those students can be successful. So they be quality students. But if they're not getting any support at home, like it's been said many times, we're not fighting a losing battle, but the battle is hard, it's tough, but we can't give up. But if the flight, keep flight, I mean the flight from the city to the suburb, and leaving 50% of our schools being of color or African-American, then we need to look at how we can adjust this. We can share some thought on that. We're down to probably about 10 minutes, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll get ready to close this out.
Well, I mean, I agree. We definitely need to be in there and trying to make adjustments as we need to, trying to push our children to greatness, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and to
mm-hmm.
be able to dream.
Yes, yeah.
Be able to dream because, you know, dreams inspire young people. They meet
mm-hmm.
professional people. They say, oh, I want to be like that. I remember meeting you
mm-hmm.
so long ago, and thank you so very much. So I went on to school.
Exactly. And we all can point to that. Dr. Smith, as you know, we can kind of point to that, somebody we can remember that we saw, even if it was a teacher or somebody who we encountered, that gay or, you know, whoever it may be, that said, you know, I want to be just like that person because I see that person going to another. But we have to continue to do. But we're going to continue to talk about this because we need to talk about it. Laura, you want to share some thought on that because we're running tight on time now. We want to kind of close it out on time tonight.
Is she still on?
Oh,
Laura?
I'm sorry. She had a phone on mute. I'm here.
Okay. We were just talking about, as Dr. Smith said, about reading and talking about our community, what part we can play. But you can share some thought on that.
I agree with Dr. Smith when it comes to giving your kids opportunity to dream. I remember when Barack Obama got elected as president, you had the black kids running around. You had black kids going around saying, man, we can do anything. You know, they elected a black man as president, and we can do anything. I don't see, I always say Obama ran on hope. He gave out hope. When Obama got out of office, it wasn't no more hope. You know, our African-American kids didn't hope to do anything. So I think we need to kind of restore dreams to our kids. And allow them to, well, let them know that they can do anything.
And Laura, just to jump in, if you allow me to jump in right here, just like you said, hope and our dream being slaying of our dreams. Just think about it. We had hope, but you know what? We always had hope. We always have hope within our communities. The problem we have is when we find something to fix on or a person to fix on, give us that inner drive in ourselves, that drive to go and try to even do better. Even if that person is not there, it must be carried on. So if we don't carry it on, that means that our families are still losing that opportunity. Now, that's my opinion about that because the hope was there. For 8 years, the hope was there. We got, you know, depending on how you look at it, you can have hope today. One thing, you can't allow anybody, regardless who in a position of leadership, take your hope from you and take your dreams from you and take your drive. You shouldn't be able to allow that, but if you're not getting the foundation, then you don't have no great effort to either drive or either dream. All right, we're going to kind of end on that note. Y'all can share some thoughts about that. Tell how, you know, we'll close the show out. And both you, Dr. Smith and Lauren, y'all can share your thoughts on the show. If you want to say something about killing dreams or slaying dreams, Andrew, go ahead, Al.
Well, when it comes to dreams, I just remember, you know, being younger and having those dreams, but not being encouraged to dream and to go upward, be upward in what I did. Not from the academic standpoint or from the counselors who were on board at that time. I myself did not get the benefit of counseling, and so my dreams were somewhat supported by my mom. And I would bounce things off her. That was the critical piece for me. Academic-wise, I can't say I had someone there that was pushing me to go forward or to help me choose a college, et cetera. That was something for me that did not exist. And I didn't even care where I was when I graduated. You know, in terms of people say, well, I'm number one on the board, I'm number two or whatever. Well, I'm just in the group. Thank God for a degree,
yes.
For graduation, you know,
mm-hmm.
because
exactly.
my dreams took me much further. They even surprised me, but I had the will to go forth to do it
exactly.
and push
awesome.
Myself.
Awesome. Great.
And so, you know, some of our kids may have to do that. We may have to encourage that. What are your dreams? What would you like to do?
Exactly. All right. That's great thought. Great thought. Great thought. Laura, you want to add some thought to that, and then we're going to wrap the show up.
Yeah, I want to say one thing. You know, when kids come to you and say they want to do this and do that, we have to stop as adults. We have to stop saying, you sure that's what you want to do? I don't know. You ain't doing too well in this subject in school. You ain't doing too well in this right here.
That's
because,
right.
I mean, that messes with a child's mind. I wasn't very good in science, but I knew I wanted to go be a physical therapist. I had people telling me, you might want to change what you want to do. Even when I got to college, I wasn't the best person when it came to the anatomy of the body and the muscles and everything like that. But I knew if I worked at it and I could show all these people, you know, y'all said I wasn't gonna do this. Now I'm in grad school for kinesiology. Just when these people said I wouldn't do it because I was not the best and the brightest kid when it came to that. So we got to stop killing not only dreams but aspirations. We have to stop doing that because
right.
you don't know
all
what
right.
that child will be. You don't. So we have to be better as people, as a society, as a culture. We just have to be better.
And I agree that. I agree. Because it doesn't all come in an academic setting.
Exactly. Well, you know, awesome, Dr. Smith and Lauren Smith. We appreciate both of y'all being on the show. We want to close it out. Y'all can close it out with y'all. Good night. And also, each and every one of our call-in individuals, we appreciate you calling in. You can call in. Not next week, but in 2 weeks, because our show rotates every 2 weeks. But we do have our show on Wednesday night. But I'm going to allow my co-host and my special guest to close the show out with their thoughts.
Well, I think this was a very good topic that you brought up. I hope that there's more conversation about that. And, you know, as I always say, especially with young people, be encouraged.
Awesome. All right. Lauren?
Okay. Yeah, I know I always have a lot of business ventures I'm getting into. Right now, me and my business partner are about to launch something we call Bucketology. Bucketology is a basketball training program that we're about to launch. It's going to have films, mentoring, ACT, all that stuff. We're launching it within the next month. I just want to go ahead and get the word out there. It's Bucketology. Hit me up on Facebook to find out more, Lauren Smith. Hit me up on Twitter at KIWIDon'tCare. I will be having more information as the week come. By the time we come back on the show in 2 weeks, I'll have a business plan and everything for you guys so you guys can latch on and just support black businesses, please.
Awesome. And again, awesome. Y'all, I thank you very much, host and special guest. We'll be back in 2 weeks on Monday night. We look forward to having you all back again. And I want to say to everybody, it's been a great show tonight. I appreciate our callers again, as I said, that called in and shared their thoughts. And you can call back again. But on Wednesday night, we have our talk show in regards to sports, Talking Sports Plus. And we want to make sure you join us on Wednesday night. And have an awesome night, as my co-host say on the Wednesday night show, take the night and on the night take the Saturday day. The Coach Tony Starr.
And I won't forget. I thank God.